Hello, and welcome to Mangasplaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read much manga before. Hosted by Deb Aoki, David Brothers, Christopher Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky. Follow along with our reading list at mangasplaining.com. This week is our first go-round the cycle. I started off with Akira. We went to David's pick, which was Delicious in Dungeon, and then Deb's pick with Mermaid Forest, Rumiko Takahashi. So we're done. We're through the cycle. This is it. This is our first, like, you can get bored of us now, I think, portion of the of it. But in order to not get bored, I kind of wanted to pick something that would be completely insane. So this week we're discussing Helter Skelter by Kyoko Okazaki. Published by Vertical Inc. The translation is credited to Vertical Inc. It's not credited to an individual translator, which I haven't seen. I haven't seen that before. And I reached out to Vertical to see, or Vertical employees or former Vertical employees, and didn't get a response. So we'll just let that go. But translation credited to Vertical Inc. Helter Skelter is by Kyoko Okazaki, who is widely regarded as sort of most groundbreaking Jose mangaka. Jose is, you know, for everybody listening at home as well, for Chip, you know, shonen manga is Shonen Jump. We're all kind of familiar with that now. It's the Narutos, it's the One Pieces, it's the, you know, the stuff that David likes. no, David's more of a sane guy. But it's the like boys action adventure. The counterpart to that is shoujo, which is girls manga. And much like in the West, it's funny, the readership of shonen manga is around 50% male, 50% female, whereas the readership for shoujo is about 90%, 95%, you know, female, 5% male. So girls will read boy things, but boys will not read girl things. And it's the same for the next age level up, which is seinen manga and jose manga. Seinen is sort of old, like men's, like older boys manga, men's manga, young men's manga. It translates a couple different ways. But that's things that we read like Delicious in Dungeon or Akira. This is our first foray into jose, which is women's comic, young women's comics, pre-marriage women's comics in a lot of different ways. There's real stratifications on gender lines in Japan and real stratifications on age lines in Japan. And the manga ratings follow the manga genres sort of follow that in Japan. But when they come to North America, they become something very different. I think this is very much a story by, for, and about women. But at the same time, there's nothing in it that isn't just contemporary fiction that anyone could read and I think pull something from. It's a very... Well, I'll read the back of the book for you real quick. After cutting-edge, full-body plastic surgery, supermodel Liliko's career is white-hot. But as her body begins to break down, she grows desperate and unhinged, lashing out as she realizes her expiration date as a product of pop culture is dangerously close. A surreal examination of the human cost of fame and the ugly side of glossy celebrity culture, Helter Skelter won the 2004 Osamu Tezuka Culture Prize and has been adapted into a feature film. Yeah. That's what it's about, but it's also about a lot of other stuff. And it is also, well, the marketing materials for both the movie and the book describe it as psychological horror as opposed to contemporary fiction or drama or anything that it could. So I think that there's a lot here. I picked it because it's a book that I think is really important and I actually really love. But I'm also really firmly, really keenly aware this book is not for everybody. And it could be just as off-putting from like page one, well, page two, as it could be, you know, as it could be something that grabs you. So I wanted to start off, as always, and ask, Chip, what did you think about it?
That's weird, man. No, it was great. Like, it was such a departure from the previous choices. Like, I think so far everything's been very distinct. Not that I wasn't expecting that, but this one felt the most for adults. Like, as I was reading, I was like, oh, this is like a New York Times kind of bestseller novel that, you know, people, you know, the New Yorker would write up and people would talk about, would have real crossover potential with like kind of mainstream audiences as well. Like, super smart, super adult. A drawing style I've never really encountered before. You know, I don't know if I want to get too much into it right now before we all discuss,
I really wanted to hear your initial thoughts, because half convinced starting that this was the one you were going to be like, fuck this book, I can't deal. And I'm glad it wasn't. Like, I'm really glad it wasn't. But I had no idea going into this if you were just going to reject it outright, because it has some things to say that are very cynical, very mean.
And I'm a joyous person with a pure heart, and I can't handle that, as you know.
I do know that, yes. Sex Criminals, available now wherever books are sold. So let's go to the rest of the crew. David, you're the next person on my screen. What'd you think of this one?
I liked it, but it took me a while to come around to it. I was really waiting for the moment when Lilico was going to like murder someone, or her full body plastic surgery would be revealed to be like some kind of supernatural thing or something. Like more of a twist than like, oh, this is just ruining her life and making everyone miserable.
Yeah.
Was this your first time reading it?
Yeah, I thought that I'd read this before, but apparently not. I might have been thinking of Pink, her other book that I think Vertigo put out.
Yeah.
But like the fashion thing was interesting. I could easily see this being like about like a sports star or a musician, the same kind of like abuse of power. Like exercising your id at all costs kind of a deal.
Yeah, all eyes are on you and how that changes you.
I'm really surprised that there's a male counterpart, or not a male counterpart even necessarily, but like a sports counterpart. Mm-hmm. Cause like this story could be told. Yeah. Steroids, you know, juicing is huge, right? Especially undetectable, you know, sort of the kinds of things that you get into with the undetectable plastic surgeries in this. I'm surprised there's no manga like that. And I think it's because that would be drugs, whereas this is surgery, and that's a very Japanese distinction about legal or illegal.
There's a bunch of drugs in it too.
Well, yeah. Let Deb. Yeah. What did you think? What did you think about this guy?
It's been a little while since I've read it, so like coming back to it again is fresh. I appreciate the art style because it's very stylish and but also very sketchy. So it gives it kind of nervous energy. Also, it pulls no punches as far as like making comments about fame and how, you know, I mean, it's the main character of the story is really despicable,
yeah,
and pitiful and horrible, and so, but it doesn't give you any easy ways of understanding her, you know, like it's not like you can say like, well, she's just evil. Or she's just a victim, you know. It's like there's another younger model who comes along and who deals with the same level of fame and pressure, and she's completely well adjusted about it.
Yeah.
So at first, because she's young, she's 15.
Yeah.
Which is also when they mention her age, I'm like, oh yeah, that is modeling. I always forget like how young models get started in that industry.
It was interesting because it's pre-Instagram, it's pre-internet kind of fame, you know, issues of fame, right? I mean, most of the other manga that I see about women dealing with fame are things like the shoujo manga, Not My Idol, for example. This one is very grown up and about aging, or fear of aging, power. It's got a lot.
So
ironically, this was actually... This was serialized in a magazine called Feel Young, which is like pretty much, you know, depending on who you talk to. But for my money, I think it's the best Jose manga magazine. There's been so much good stuff that has been serialized that I've been able to get my hands on and read that's come out of Feel Young.
Chihaya Furu is also from Feel Young, isn't it?
Yeah, Chihaya Furu. Some other stuff that I was really interested in and pitched to Viz, and they passed on because Jose doesn't sell. So we got to talk about that too. I want to talk about how this sold exceptionally badly. But first, since we all mentioned the art, and at least two of us are professional artists, let's dig into the art here. Shoujo manga, girls' comics, developed out of the work of Tezuka and other like people in the 50s, and quickly got codified, went into its own space. There were lots of women who came in. There were like really influential gay dudes who came in, who sort of made that like what we think of as the manga look or the anime look, the huge eyes, the sparkles, the beautiful hair, the attention to fashion. And Jose manga takes that one step further, and it like the characters themselves almost become more abstract on the page. They become ideas of characters. They become ideas of beauty. They become ideas of what have you. And Kyoko Okazaki has a lot to do with that. Her look here, her style of art, and she actually started in the late 80s and early 90s. She was doing fashion illustration. She comes to this from an illustrator's background as well as a manga background. She was doing comics, obviously, as well as some design work. And her look here became, for a long time, the look of Jose manga. Even authors like, well, a good example is Moyoko Ono, who was the assistant to Kyoko Okazaki. I think earlier in her career, her work has become more and more like Okazaki Sensei's work over time. And you can really see it in Memoirs of Amorous Gentlemen, which is her newest work in English. It's digital only on Crunchyroll, and it's not a great presentation of the work, unfortunately. But her work has moved from this like beautiful, chibi, cute, shoujo, you know, sugar and spice and everything nice look, to looking more and more like Okazaki as she's gotten further along in her career, which I think is really interesting. Chip, what did you think of the art? This is, like you said, this is an art that you've encountered before, maybe ever, and I'm curious what you thought.
It was pretty off-putting at first. I can immediately tell that the artist had previously been a fashion illustrator.
Yeah, like, this is the first page, and this is, like, both, like, this is, like, a real satire of beauty right there.
But, like, in terms of depiction of Liliko, like, you can tell that there's kind of fashion illustration background there, but not a lot beyond that. So like what happens is a lot of it ends up being very crude, awkward, anatomy is off, like some of the decisions aren't ones I would make, and they're kind of rendered in a very kind of flat style for the most part. But kind of as I read it and as I kind of got used to it, I started to appreciate it more, because it was it felt more like a vehicle in order to tell the story and to, like, kind of highlight the main character and their beauty and their ugliness at the same time. Like, it's an interesting choice. Like, I don't think this would have worked, you know, if you had any of the other artists that we've talked about drawing them, you know?
No, because you can't. It's actually, it's a funny thing. Emily Carroll, I asked her a question once at an event, and she drew a story that had sexual assault, had rape in it, and I was like, your work is beautiful, like your work is legitimately gorgeous, how do you draw truly terrible things without making it pretty? And I think she had a, like, she was like, it was really, really hard to fight against my desire as an artist to make things look good on the page when the things that I'm trying to make look good are reprehensible and I don't want them to look good. And I feel like there's a lot of this, that idea in this work, that like, if you dash these things off, and her work looks very quick, maybe you are not embellishing it. Maybe you are like, literally, this is the clearest, like, this is like basic prose, you know what I mean? Like, this is all in the reader now. If I just leave this on the page with very little ornamentation, it's up to the reader to make the call about what's pretty, if it's ugly, if it's hideous, you know, that kind of thing. And that's what I felt for.
I mean, Emily Carroll, even when she was depicting horrific things, they're still gorgeous. Like, she can't not make things look stunning. They still look horrific, but it's done with such an elegance, like, She's above and beyond almost any illustrator working today. But this is very much a how do I tell the story style with speed and like kind of brutality.
David, you said you kind of bounced off of the line, like the artwork at first too.
Yeah, it feels sort of like if I found this at a Comic-Con, like going through Artist Alley, I would assume like American indie comic, like early 2000s. And one thing that sort of struck me about it was the way that she uses the screen tone for the shadows and the drawing, the lighting, and that kind of thing, where it's almost like she doesn't like cutting screen tones, so she found a really impressionistic way to use it instead.
Right.
And sometimes it's amazing, other times it's like a little less successful, but it's I think it speaks to what Chris was saying about like drawing something horrible in a way that's not really aspirational. Because theoretically, there's a lot of stuff in this book that would be amazing, like being famous, like getting a crazy rings from your partners and that kind of thing. But it's never drawn like it's a thing you actually want.
Yeah.
There's like maybe four panels of someone having a good time in this manga. Yeah.
Even the sex is rather perfunctory.
Yeah, or horrible.
Yeah.
Or gross. Yeah. Yeah, or like, or the sex you find out about after the fact is even worse somehow. Yeah.
I like how the sex stuff was handled. Like with weird cropping and kind of balloons covering a lot of the acts, because it's not about, you know, I had this bit with sex criminals where it's not about titillating the reader. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the goal here. Mm-hmm. It's to kind of like, it's to tell the story. And the stuff with the mind games with Hada and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was super intense, even though it wasn't depicted graphically, you know? Mm-hmm.
There was a cliffhanger with those two that actually it really bothered me while I was reading. I was like, when are they going to get back to what the heck happened? But it's just sort of swept under the carpet of all the other abuse. I'm flipping through the book now trying to find the scene.
Was it when Hada tied up?
Yeah.
And the whatever inserted?
Yeah. And the boyfriend's like, yeah, I'll be over soon. It's like, okay, like they're obviously going to follow up on this terrible thing that's going to happen, but they just kind of roll with it.
They cut away. There is like a one panel denouement on that, but it's a lot.
It's sort of like, I don't know if you all have read Straight Bullets, but the series went on hiatus for like 5 years, and the last issue before the hiatus, a major character was locked in a trunk. So for five years, there was like this cliffhanger of like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen to this person? Wow. It's kind of that kind of cliffhanger. Where I was just waiting, you know, for the other shoe to come down. Like, this is where the more horrible things start happening.
Yeah, because the next time you see Hada, I think she's about to commit another atrocity on behalf of Lilico. Like, it goes from that scene, and then later. Yeah. No, I mean, I did notice a few times.
She's not important enough to come back to. She's not important enough to save in Lilico's, because it's Lilico's story.
Yeah, right? I noticed a few instances where there'd be a lot of kind of black box white text that are kind of just like kind of filling in the blanks a little bit. I guess this is another case where when I was reading, it was like, how much of this is, you know, lost in the translation, or the translator's trying to like, trying to bridge gaps, or things aren't quite.
I don't think any of it, honestly. Yeah. I think when it happens, like this is an example of a page where there's like a black text on white bottom. And this one very specifically is, It's a magazine article, and I think it would, that's one of the problems that's lost in translation, is that Japanese magazines have a very specific look to them when they have like text overlays and things like that that we don't always get in translations. Like if you look at that double page spread at the end, would have read really clearly. If you look at Feel Magazine, which the story ran in when it was released in Japan. You can tell by the way that the text is laid out and the way that magazine covers and things like that are designed that it's very different than how we would do graphic design in North America. And if you're following along at mangasplaining.com, you can see the cover that I'm talking about. Right away, you can see things like, you know, this kind of text, this like bubbly, you know, thicker Japanese text is the same sign of font that they used on the back of the book when they left some of the Japanese intact or remade it for the English language edition. But the fact that this, you know, beautiful illustration of a lady's face on Feel Young magazine has no fewer than five different fonts, and the text goes right across like the face and stuff. It's just a different kind of graphic design. Yeah. And I think that a lot of that, when I was reading this time, I could see what it was supposed to be in the Japanese edition, but when I read it the first time, I couldn't, because I just didn't have that cultural know-how. And that is one of the problems of translation, of moving works between spaces, is that, yeah, you might have a really, really good translator, but if you don't have a designer that is also super versed in Japanese design trying to translate the design of the work, I think that's a problem. And that was maybe, honestly, that was maybe my only problem with the whole book, is I thought that the design needed more oomph than it got. It looked like it was lettered by a letterer. And as someone who is and was a letterer, no shade there, but like being a graphic designer is a different thing. It's like a different skill. And I kind of wanted that. But yeah, Deb, we didn't get your whole feedback on the art, and I wanted to go back to that.
Oh, I mean, to segue from what you were saying about the text, some of the text decisions were kind of suspect in my mind. Using a Times Roman, like a serif font, a thin serif font on black. Some of that stuff was really hard to read. Like, I had to take off my glasses and try to read, you know, the text. So I thought,
oh, quick check. Who is reading it physical? Who's reading it digital? I have a physical copy.
Digital.
There you go. I found that the white text on a black background, especially when it was Times New Roman, but even when it was like technical or whatever this font is, was actually pretty hard to read at times, just because of printing issues. So yeah, I'm with you on that for sure. They should have maybe given that a little bit more thought, but also it's trying to duplicate what the Japanese did. So that's a tough thing.
Yeah,
that's true.
Lettering was not my favorite part.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah,
okay. There's no letterer accredited. Okay. We're not going after anyone in particular. Okay. Cool. I want to ask about the shock value of this book, because I think that's a big part of it, and it's baked into what the author was trying to accomplish. I think it is supposed to shock and distract and unnerve people. And Chip, I wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I don't know. I don't think that that's something that happens except in horror in the West. Like, people aren't trying to deliberately upset people with work. And this is clearly supposed to be upsetting.
Yeah, it's weird, because like, I didn't find it shocking. Like, I could... You know, David mentioned he was kind of waiting for the supernatural horror twist, and I didn't have that. Maybe it's because I haven't read enough manga to have that. Like, from the get-go, I'm just like, oh, okay. When they mentioned the fetuses, like, immediately I'm just like, okay, she's been getting, you know, treatments, and she's falling apart, and she's going to fall apart and kind of lose her mind throughout and play with these people. Like, I kind of saw where it was going, so it wasn't really shocking. I was a little shocked by some of the sex stuff, mostly because I wasn't expecting it in manga. I don't know why I wasn't.
What do you mean specifically?
Like the mind game threesome stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, and specifically the scene that David and I were referencing with her tied up with whatever inserted that didn't feel good. I was like, oh, okay, this is going places.
Yeah.
But it was, it just felt like an adult story. Like, I didn't see it being shock for any kind of shock's sake. It was just more like, yeah, it was just a well-told story with kind of a wide, interesting cast of characters, all with something to do and something that they want, you know? The only point where I kind of got tricked up a little bit was the main detective character, like towards the end when it turned into Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Every few pages, like, that felt a little kind of. I kind of wish that they'd seeded that a bit more towards the beginning and played with it.
I saw that as an escalation of the drug abuse. I saw that she was having these visions because she was so fucked up on the drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I expected it sooner. Mm. Like, it felt like it was a bit kind of like there was a sharp, like, okay, and now we have this happening.
Mm-hmm. I do want to come back to that, but maybe it's not quite the right time yet. But
on the shock value front,
yeah,
I think that it was shocking, but in sort of a, like, this story's been ripped from the headlines kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, something about it feels very much, if there weren't news articles like in the paper about this sort of thing when this was coming out, I'd be very surprised. You know,
I want to. It's funny you mentioned that. I was doing the show notes for Akira yesterday, and I looked up Domu, because we ended up talking so much about Domu in episode zero, and Domu is based on a real housing development north of Ikebukuro, where a dozen to two dozen people a year would throw themselves off of the top of it. And this is like a real place where people live to this day. And he saw this in the newspaper. He was like, oh, this is like the most suicide place in Japan. I'm definitely going to make a manga about this. Wow. And that's where Domu came from.
Wow.
So like, you want to talk about rip from the headlines, that finding that out about Domu was crazy. So yeah, absolutely. Helter Skelter. Like, she references real fashion brands in here. Yeah. She's anytime that they give people just initials or they bleep out names, those are real people. This was running alongside other work she was making, and that other work was actually in fashion magazines. She was serializing comics in fashion magazines as much as she was serializing in manga magazines. So yeah, this was hyper current, like hyper cutting edge at the time it was coming out. This like super high end beauty stuff. I don't know if
we mentioned what's the year this came out.
Oh, sorry. So this, it's a weird one. It was actually written originally in 1995 and 1996. Okay. And the Tankubon, which is the version that we're reading here, the trade paperback, came out in 2003.
Okay. Which kind of makes sense.
Sorry, David, I interrupted you there. I want to go back to what you were thinking about the ripped at the headlines.
Oh, me. Sorry. That was such like a stirring speech about it being shocking.
Oh, sorry. I was like, it was so... It fucked me up yesterday when I was doing the show. Yeah. And that's why I stopped working on it. Sorry.
But it even begins with a quote, like a word before we begin, a laugh and a scream are very similar. I think she's definitely trying to evoke a bunch of gross feelings, and pretty successfully, I have to say.
Yeah. Like the page 2, page 3 spread is like literally a spread. Like it is a naked woman, except for a bustier, lying spread eagle. And it's a double page full color spread on page 2 and page 3 with like pubic hair. And like, this is the thing about shock value. And this is something that I don't know translated to this work. This feels like a mature work. I feel like it would really be off-putting, but showing pubic hair in manga, like, was actually illegal and still is illegal in Japan. So for her to have these spreads where you see Lilico fully nude with like her you know, pubic hair, bush hanging out, that's like getting fined or going to jail level work. Like for that to appear in like a, like even a women's magazine is shocking as fuck in a Japanese context. And even here you're flipping, you're like, oh, that's a lot. Like the insertion bit, like the fact that she didn't shy away from drawing anything is so different than manga, not only of the period, but even today, where like people, well, not as much today, but maybe 5 years ago, the Tokyo governor had a pickle up about erotic manga. But it's interesting because she actually started out in the research I was doing. Her first manga was Ero manga, like in a men's magazine. She was drawing like hentai, or what we think of as hentai, but Ero manga, and moved into girls' comics, women's comics, and then sort of this is the pinnacle of her work. And I think it's really interesting in that regard.
Does she? You mentioned that she had work running in fashion magazines as well. Is it like this? Or was it more fashion illustration?
So you read Pink, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Pink is the one about the girl who's working as a call girl at night to pay for her pet alligator. Her pet alligator that she literally feeds men to when she's done with them. It's good. It's very good, actually. But I wanted to start with this one because this one is like less abstract in a way. That one's we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But like absolutely, these themes, like she is absolutely a feminist mangaka, and especially in 1995-1996 she inspired a generation of feminist mangaka like Ano sensei and like other people working in the manga industry today, precious few of whom have been translated into English, unfortunately. That's the way it goes. But yeah, like she, all this thread runs through all of her work of like the expectations that women, that are placed on women, the expectations that women place on themselves, society, all these things, and they just manifest in very different ways. Like obviously this is a pretty fucking hardcore exploration of those ideas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. Like even her like, I don't think she could get away with naming brands in a fashion magazine in a critical context, but absolutely she would still do things like that. And then her other work, you go read it to see what she really thinks. It's like when Chip does an image book instead of a Marvel book, and you get to see what he really thinks about
it. Shout out to Image and Marvel.
Shout out to Image and Marvel. DC, sorry. The Batman. But yeah, like I think especially after working in fashion magazines. This is towards the end of her manga making career. This is so critical of like the fashion industrial complex. You know what I mean? That like, this is someone who's been working in this genre, this mode, these spaces for 10 years and seen the things that have happened. I think it's shocking. Obviously it's shocking, but things like the acid attack, that's something that happened. That's something that absolutely happened. Things like, you know, all the suicides, like, unfortunately that's a real thing. And the call girl rings and the whatever, like, these are all real things. And usually they don't make their way into mainstream manga magazines. Usually they're in the tabloids, which also get fucking roasted in this book too, which I think is like, she is having her cake and eating it too with this one. I think it's really interesting. As you can tell, I love this book. But yeah, let's go actually about that. So yeah, cultural context, like that nudity that we saw, that we kind of take for granted in something that's mature, is literally legally transgressive in its original context. And that's something that it's hard to bring the translation across for, but I think is a big part of why this manga created such a stir when it was being serialized in Japan, and why it became a sort of lasting, well, there's other reasons too. We'll get into that too. Yeah. Here's a quick question. Chip, you've read this now. It's not a pleasant place, like, even though it's well done, it's not a pleasant place to spend time necessarily. It's not reading for fun all the time. Would you go and read another work by her? Would you, like, the only one that's in English is Pink. Would you be like, yeah, I want to read that, or I'll put it on the to read pile, but I'm not rushing?
Yeah, I definitely read more. Probably more down the line. Like, it doesn't disturb me. I find I have a disconnect between, like, say reading a novel versus a graphic novel, because the graphic novel, I know I'm going to be able to consume it in like 3 hours, 4 hours. Whereas a novel, you kind of sit with it a lot longer. I don't tend to be like kind of like shocked by a graphic novel as much as I would be by a standard prose novel. Yeah. I mean, there's good or bad that come with that. Like, I'm not turned off because it's like I can't let my mind be subjected to another one of these books. Like,
yeah,
I find it, you know, rather easy to kind of get into them, and you know, I still feel things reading them. I just don't feel them as kind of maybe as intensely as I do in other kind of media.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you've kind of dedicated your entire life. Is it that thing that where you can't watch something without having to pull it apart because you make that media?
I don't know. I kind of have that with everything, but you dwell on comics more than other forms. Like, you don't dwell on words when you're reading prose. Like, you don't really slow it down or bounce around a page to like find your favorite words on the page. Whereas, like, you know, TV, movies, you know, if it was a horror movie, the time and the shock of it all is set out for you. We all watch those with the same amount of time. Unless you're pausing and going to the washroom and getting, you know, some snacks. So I find with stuff like this, it's harder to get fully lost in it, because when you view the page, you're judging kind of the art and whether this works. And you're kind of like, your eyes kind of making its way around, no matter how much they train you to like follow in the lines. Like, there's still a bit of a remove there when it's a graphic novel. But you get more into it. I'm noticing with the manga, I'm getting more into them than I would with kind of the North American comics, because they are so long.
What do you mean? Like because it's like just a physically longer story.
Yeah, because it's a physically longer story. You sit with the characters for a much longer time. So there's more of a chance for them to grab you. Like, by halfway through this, I was like, okay, I do really want to see what happens by the end of this. For all the characters.
Yeah. I think one thing North American manga or North American comics and Japanese manga have in common is like the unit of storytelling is the same, like about 20 to 30 pages ish for serialized stuff, but they're collected so differently that the pacing feels different. Like 6 issues of an American comic versus, you know, one collection of a Japanese comic feels like a completely different genre sometimes.
Yeah. This feels seamless.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, I've unfortunately been trained by, you know, the Marvel and DC of it all, where I'm constantly throwing in exposition and reminding the readers why Wolverine is the best of what he does. You know?
Because it's not very nice?
Yeah, or? But it's not quite, you know, the Claremont level of, like, where you had to explain the power set for the characters every issue. But, you know, that's always the note I would get from the editors. Like, remind people what this character's name is.
Oh, again. Really?
I'm like, well, people... Yeah, yeah. It's funny. You know, this is a bit of a tangent, but, you know, I remember one of the writers was writing an X-Men book, and Captain America shows up, and one of the notes was, you know, make sure you name check Captain America. His note back was like, if the reader doesn't know who Captain America is, we've done a really horrible job.
By now.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
But these just feel like, serialized, like Dickens or Dostoevsky or whatever. Like, it's not, they're not individual stories that are stitched together. They're actual chapters in a longer story.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's interesting because when we do get something that feels like individual stories that are stitched together, like Delicious in Dungeon, mm-hmm. you were like, does this turn into anything? Like, does this ever become? And it does. It absolutely does. When it kicks into gear. But those initial chapters are very much one and done mm-hmm. just to get you into the world. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of manga coming out right now that is very much in that vein, that are like one and done chapters, and it just builds an appreciation of characters over an arc rather than the big heavily designed team is one that just came out that I read.
Yeah.
That's just like basically all the gods up in heaven creating each animal on earth one at a time, and every chapter is a new animal that they create. And it's just like, oh, what a cool, fun, high idea. I feel like What the Font next week is going to maybe be a little bit of that, where it's just like completely standalone chapters. Mm. And that's a really popular kind of manga because Who's got time to read 400, you know, volumes of whatever? Who's got time to read 1,000 chapters of one piece?
It's the nature of serialization, because you can think of the first couple chapters as like the pilot of a TV series. You know, like at any time they're going to pull the plug on it, right? So it has to sit on its own. And then when it becomes fairly certain that it's going to keep going, like I think that's what happened with Delicious in Dungeon. It's like, I don't feel like, I'm not sure whether she had like this grand epic plan for how the story was going to go, but it feels like at a certain point it stops being this cooking thing and starts, like you said, it's going into the characters. This one is definitely not meant to be more than one volume of story. I mean, I feel like I don't think I could stand another volume of this. You know, of this spiral.
I do kind of want to know what her performance was going to be at the end.
Well, the ending part was very David Lynch.
So I want to talk about the ending here, and I want to like, does anyone have anything they want to say? Because the tone of this podcast is about to shift pretty friggin' dramatically.
Yes.
Does anyone have anything else they want to say?
I want to say something about the women in how she draws women.
Yeah, go ahead.
One, the boobs are very realistic. And when you see the scene where the woman's breasts are like scarred with acid, there's a certain appreciation for that. Like I can say like, yeah, that's, that feels like a woman's body. You know, the way that the limbs move and that, you know, it's the way sex happens. It's for me, like sometimes when I read comics, I see how mostly men, but also some female artists draw women in a way that seems like, what?
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen a woman before? Yeah. Is a pretty common complaint.
But this feels very, this was very, that for however sketchy or like, you know, the big eyes or the giant, the juicy lips, it's kind of, you know, Kardashian, right? The one thing I wanted to mention too is in Japan, the sexism is heavy and the body, the pressure to look a certain way is very heavy too. If you're not like a size small, you're in the big girls. You get sent to the big girls department to go buy clothes. You get teased mercilessly and you are just considered a lesser than. So the part where, you know, there's this pressure to be perfect and this pressure to be petite and have a small face and look a certain way, I feel like this book really, really gets into that, particularly when Liliko's sister, you know, who is kind of chubby and kind of stumpy. And then she starts getting seduced at the idea of like, once a sparrow gets a taste, they want to become a peacock, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The girls teasing her was pretty sad, yeah. I thought.
Mm-hmm. Cause it was, I don't know. Did it ring true to you? I mean, I feel like you just explained how it rang true to you, but I wanted to like,
yeah, no, I mean, I feel like, you know, that's what you see in Japan. It's the way that you're judged for how you look is really strong. There's this model, Naomi Watanabe, who was in Kurai for Straight Guy Japan, where she's this plus size model, and she just owns it, you know, kind of like Lizzo. Just kind of like, mm-hmm. she's big, she's bold, and she just kind of owns it. And that is rare, you know, and mm-hmm. she still is kind of treated as comic relief in some respects, but you know, she puts a stake in the ground and says, you know, it's okay. I'm sexy like this.
Mm. She's great. Her Instagram is really good, by the way. If you follow her, she's so good. But yeah, I like that she's not saying, oh, I can never be the funny girl who's also like chubby, but I can also be the funny girl who's chubby as well. Like she'll mm-hmm. do like glamour shots and she'll do serious stuff and she'll do comedy stuff. And I really love that about her. And I thought that, yeah, the brutal scene in the book for me really was like, out of all the depravity, the way they went after her sister,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, you're not just because like you're fat and you're not good looking and we hate you. And because of that, you're also stupid. Mm. Like that's like the thing that got me. It's like, oh, just looking at you being chubby, you're an idiot. Look at her. Mm. She's a simpleton. Like it was, that was real. Like that was some real shit. Like it, you know, I was fat all my life and that was not dissimilar to things I heard on the playground, but you know, it's different for guys for sure. Not 100%, but it's definitely different. But like there's a very famous big and tall men's chain in Japan. It's where I get all of my cool things. This sweater actually. So like, yeah, I actually love, like, I think it's changing, you know, in 2020, which is the last time I was in Japan, I can say it's definitely a little different.
I can find clothes that can fit me now, because before it was impossible.
Right?
So I think, you know, I mean, partly the Western diet, you know, makes people bigger. let's face it.
Yeah. But like physically bigger, yeah. You're not the tallest person on the train
West.
Anymore.
Yay,
like,
West. Did it again.
But I think, you know, like this being a product of that time when that pressure was much more intense, I think is interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear from people that the pressure is just as intense, but it's different now.
Yeah. Did you hear the thing about the Olympics today?
Where the
no what?
Olympics chief said women talk too much during meetings.
So he's not going to invite them anymore?
Maybe he shouldn't be invited.
Yeah.
Maybe they shouldn't have the Olympics in Japan this year.
Maybe there shouldn't be Olympics, actually. But like, how far do you want to go? Like, but yeah, that's... Well, it looks like they're not going to get to hold the Olympics. So I guess, you know, it's a victory of sorts.
Well, when this,
but,
when this airs...
So I brought that up to say that sexism is not going away. It's still there in Japan. There's been a fair amount of progress, but there's still
absolutely.
Sexism in Japan. A lot of pressure to look a certain way.
David, you wanted to say something before we switch forward too.
It was much less serious than Deb's.
Unfortunately. Go for it.
Okay. Mine's pure, not serious. So I'm excited to have a bridge.
But speaking to the point of like kind of first chapters being pilots and the way it seems like one story that continues through. One thing with a lot of longer serialized stuff like shonen manga, and I imagine shoujo as well, is the first volume will be one thing. Mm. And then volumes two through whatever are like completely different. Mm. Sort of like you get your foot in the door and now you can tell the story you really want.
It's true. Yeah.
And I feel like this starts from like the story she really wants to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it felt very planned out. I was going to say that what really fascinated me by it was that there was clearly a plan with all the female characters to display different stages of a woman's life and how people view them. Like, you know, the sister that we talked about, like, you know, being pressured into this, you know, the cute young model who's in this weird way too early prime where everything's just going well. And then Lilico and then Mama, which is also a fascinating character who's like just on the other end of it and taking advantage of it all. And it's really.
And the doctor too. They make a point of saying that the doctor doesn't wear makeup and, you know, she just doesn't care about that kind of level of looking a certain way, but she feeds into helping other women look a certain way, like a certain look, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it was such an amazing range of characters, mm-hmm. all each with their own point, but all mm-hmm. Towards the larger point of the story, mm-hmm. which is super impressive from a storytelling point of view.
The mama character, I had a hard time actually rereading this because in the movie, the live action movie that they did of this in 2012, she's so good. She's fucking pure evil, but like in a nonchalant, like, I guess these things happen. Like at the end of the movie, that's her last line. Sometimes things just happen. And it's delivered with like such a like, I don't give a fuck kind of a vibe. The actress on that is so good. And I feel like
I want to see this
you get
now.
The sense of that, but it's not delivered the same way. So the last two things I want to say is, she doesn't use line weight. She doesn't use line weight anywhere. No. There's no line variation in the whole book. It looks like it was drawn with tech pens. It's incredible to me. Such an artistic choice. This is like her 20th volume of manga or something chronologically that she did. So this was definitely a choice. But yeah, there's no line weight, I think, anywhere. Even when she does eyelashes, she's just the same line weight, but she just does really little marks, which is really fun.
There is line weight. Like she's using maybe two or three different tech pens. Mm.
You think so?
I'm on a page right now, 312, and the bottom
312.
Bottom,
let's do this.
The bottom panel is feathers, which has a much more delicate look than the top panel.
Yeah, maybe that was actually maybe that's nib. That doesn't look like tech pen. That looks like nib because it doesn't line anyway.
Like there's variety in the line. Like it feels like it's being done with pen, but.
You think it's nibs rather than okay?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, it could be, but there's not. You're right. There's not a lot of variety to it. But you know,
And I actually love the look of it. If we ever get around to reading Natsume Ono's work, I think I want to come back to that discussion because her work is incredible. But the other thing I want to talk about real quick was
on
page
the line
14,
weight
15.
Point.
Yeah, David.
What's the short version of why not using any line weight or using very little line weight is impressive for our listeners who
for
don't
me,
know?
Oh, okay. For me, line weight is used to differentiate, to pull details forward or backward, to pull characters forward or backward, to add depth and form, like adding a thicker line makes something look heavier or makes it look more in shadow. Even if it's like, even if you're just drawing a ball, where the line is heavier and where the line is lighter, thicker or thinner, is where the light is hitting, for example. So it just implies form in a way that's really clear. And for her to do this in a very similar line weight throughout and have everything have a deliberately like everything's on the same plane kind of a thing. It never, I don't know. I feel like it just is such a good choice. Like all of these pages don't look like anything else, but I kind of love them too. And I feel like it's deliberately grotesque. Like it is off-putting and you're not supposed to like it. And you are supposed to maybe bounce off it, which is kind of what I thought would happen with this episode. At the same time, I kind of love that she did that and was just like, yeah, anyway.
Also, when you stray away from using actual line weights, like a variety of them, your mistakes are much more evident.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
It's so much easier. Like there's a reason like the style that I draw in has a lot of thick to thin, because a lot of times I'm going over the line fixing a thing and it's like, oh, now it's thick. Okay. Maybe now it's thin. I don't know. Yeah. There's definitely a lot more kind of laid bare in this art style, which, you know, obviously goes with the theme if it's a conscious choice. Mm-hmm.
And my other favorite female mangaka, well, I love Ono Sensei too, but is Ayazawa, who did Nana and Paradise Kiss. This is the one I recommended last week. And her work is all about the line weight. Like, she loves creating, like, depth and form, but will go to just, like, one, like, thin line to pop a character, like to make a character flat deliberately, but she's really good, I feel, at using line weight. And I think that something like this, it just gives it a, I don't know, it's like an ethereal look almost. Like I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I really gravitated to that. But I also liked her layouts. I thought her use of full width panel pages for reveals was really good. There's a really good, but like actually objectively bad. It's objectively wrong. And like Will Eisner would be spinning in his grave. Page 14, 15, this double page spread. Page 15 in particular, the reading order of the panels is wrong. there's no clear reading order. Even if you're reading right to left, you can read any of the panels on this page in any order. And any of the panels on this page, except for the absolute top, oh, it's Lilico, Lilico super cute on page 14, you can read them in any order because it is snippets of conversations. It's girls, it's women, it's people talking about fashion, and it's cutting scene to scene. Like, it's all scene to scene transitions, but on the same page, on the same subject, in a McLeod kind of a way. And the fact that she did this to introduce the book, that it's deliberately, like, it's not cluttered, but it's busy, and it's like information overload, but it's not like it sidesteps a lot of the problems with that. It goes out of its way to show lots of different women in different situations interacting or responding to Lilico before we get to the next page, which is the full width reveal of Lilico in front of the mirror. What the fuck is this? And you realize that this like cute, sweet girl, like it's like a pretty standard like trope of like pulling the wool out. But I just love that first 2-page spread, and the 2-page spread with the magazine reveals after Lilico's secrets are found out at the end, I liked a lot. And there's another 2-page spread that I thought was really good. And she just, yeah, I loved her full width panel reveals. But I also love things like the close up on her eye here, where it goes from like, and you could see like, you could just feel the tension building, where she isn't afraid to do moment to moment transitions either. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in this artistically I really, really like, or at least responded to.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not surprising that so many, like literally a generation or maybe two of women mangaka in Japan, like, There's like 10 years after this came out in 1995 where everything looks like this across the board in Jose manga. And I think it's hard because there's like none of it's been translated. None of it's been released here. And it's one of those things that like gets me excited about going to Japan and seeing all the stuff that, you know, you read one sentence about in Wikipedia and then here's like a whole fucking bookshelf and you get to actually dig in. So yeah, it's pretty fun.
They're much more stylish and like, what was that, the woman who did Supply? Her stuff is very beautiful.
Yeah. Less controlled than that, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like, it feels angry. Doesn't it? Like, at every panel that Lilico's in, even when she's, like, happy, feels angry to me. Yeah. But there's also real weird, like, 80s, what's that 80s Japanese music that all the kids are into these days, where it all sounds like yacht rock?
City pop?
Yeah. City pop. There's like a real city pop illustration vibe to a lot of the like pinup-y illustrations of Lilico in this that is like almost like parody. Like, it's another level of translation that we never had city pop originally. So when we look at this, we don't see it. But I think the kids today that are into that city pop aesthetic are going to look at it and go, oh, this is dark city pop. This is what this was. So that's good. So yeah. And Chip, any final thoughts before I want to just switch and talk about one thing before we move to the end?
Just in terms of talking about art styles, like, I think I'm so used to like looking at comic book art and being like, how can this be fixed? How can this be corrected?
Yeah.
Because that's how we're kind of used to looking at comic book art, because it has a story to tell and you don't want to be distracted by things like that. Whereas fine art, you can kind of break rules all the time. Like, I'm starting to kind of like trying to reframe the way I view comics with this book and be like, oh, is... Nice. Like, that hand's not right, but is it helping?
Like the hand on the back across? Cover isn't right.
Yeah, but yeah. Is it helping getting the feeling across? Is it helping the story? Like, what is it? What are they trying to do, and are they successful with it? And then they are, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Natsumono. We're gonna love Natsumono. I can't wait.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So if you read all the way to the end of this book, you get to the last page and it says to be continued. And there was no continuation of this, because if you flip past the biography page of Okazaki Sensei to the very last page, and it's called a note from Shodensha, note from Shodensha's publishing Japanese edition. So I'm going to read it because it's the best way to actually just say this, because it's the official way. After the serialization of Helter Skelter ended in May of 1996, Kyoko Okazaki was struck by a drunk driver. She is still currently in rehabilitation. Under normal circumstances, manga goes through a process of revisions and corrections before being published in tankobon or omnibus format. But in this case, accepting some changes confirmed with Ms. Okazaki, the work has been published as is. Ms. Okazaki has been slowly but surely recovering, and we sincerely hope to publish a more nearly perfect edition in the future. We would like to thank everyone involved with bringing this work to publication, including Mayoko Ano. We are especially grateful to Ms. Okazaki's family and offer our thanks and respect from the bottom of our hearts, editorial department. So that was the note that was included in the 2003 edition, and there was never another edition. The 2003 edition is the one that remained in print, and many of her other works, short works, rarities, etc., have been bought back into print from a variety of publishers over the years. But unfortunately, Okazaki Sensei never fully recovered, and it is unlikely she will ever make manga again. She was hit by a drunk driver, and it's it was a blow. It was a blow to everybody involved, and it reverberated throughout the industry, because this was pretty much seen as the height of her powers, this like critical, thoughtful, like excoriation of all of these values of all of the work that she had been doing, had been built on, you know, and this is it. So this actually, as it mentioned, this was published in 96, and this actually wasn't the end of the story. The story was supposed to continue, and I think that there was even a chapter, I heard through the grapevine, let's say, that there was a chapter that was in progress, that this wasn't a finished serialization that hasn't been collected or seen or whatever. And, you know, the fact that it says at the end, I think, to be continued, it's sort of a rallying cry for her to get better, like a Gambare, you know, you can do it, Gambate sort of a thing. But yeah, this was the last manga she made, and they waited until 2003 to release it in the hopes that she would heal and get better, and it didn't happen. And it adds a really... This is a disturbing manga. It is cynical. It is mean. It is unsettling. But it adds a really sad note as well to the work for me, and it's especially seeing how the ways of the work has continued to live on. And I knew the story of Okazaki Sensei and what had happened to her going into this work. And I was curious, Chip, did you flip to the back? Did you research this before you read it? Did you get to the end of the story and then discover what had happened?
Yeah. That's how I discovered it, by finishing the story.
Yeah, same boat.
David, Deb? Oh, yeah.
I had heard about her accident before.
And I'm upset because I know I'll never get to read the story like David, you and Chip did without knowing that. Mm-hmm. Like it does, like things like the accidents that the lead character causes take on a different weight for sure. There are elements of the story that are, that's really tough. And knowing that, especially with the ending now, with the Twin Peaksy stuff, that maybe that was intended to eventually develop into something. Mm-hmm. Who knows, right? And it's been... Yeah, it made me really question when we were undertaking this project. This was one of the books I wanted to talk about. It's one of my favorite standalone Jose graphic novels, whether or not I would recommend it, because it's, you know, kind of a bummer episode to end on, frankly. But I still wanted to mention it because I think her work needs to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. And that was really important for me.
Yeah, I mean, the work is the work. Like, it's horrible what happened to her, but the work still just kind of stands on its own. To not, you know, bring it onto the show because of the accident would be weird, I think.
So for me, I actually read this book specifically because I was asked to introduce a film at a film festival, the film adaptation of Helter Skelter. In 2012, there was a movie made of this book. So again, 10 years again removed from when the book came out, which was itself like 8 years removed from when it was serialized. And I read the book. I read everything about Okazaki. I was like ready to go. And the film adaptation is weird as hell. It is a note for note, page for page, nearly adaptation of this.
Is it really?
Of this book.
Huh.
But it is lush. It's like this book. They turned around and the mangaka who does Atelier of Witch Hat or something, or like Oliver Coipel or Alex Ross did a version of this in like the lushest, brightest colors. Like the whole thing is 2012, but it still looks like it's got a really fancy Instagram filter on it, like the whole movie. And it's, I can't explain how antithetical it is to my love of the manga, but I still love the film. It really is a completely different beast than though. And when you see her, and she's legitimately beautiful, she's played by like an idol, like a really beautiful actress idol in this. And you see that she's doing these terrible things, but she's beautiful, like beautiful, beautiful. It adds a completely different layer. And going back, and like I said, the Mama-san character is so much more vicious and I think developed in the movie, because they had to, you know, they chopped a couple characters, they tightened the focus a little bit. It's a movie, right? But everything else is still in it. But it also changes the ending a little bit in a way that I think is just a tiny way, but I think, David, you would find fulfilling. And I can, it's on Netflix Japan and it has subtitles, miraculously, English subtitles. So you got a VPN, you want to go watch Helter Skelter, you can just type in Helter Skelter into Netflix if you've got your VPN set to Japan. But the big change is at the end, they're not in Mexico because flying a film crew to Mexico is expensive if you're filming in Japan. They're in Shibuya and the whole ending takes place in Shibuya. But at the like freak club that Lilico's in at the end, Hada is still her assistant, and Hada's boyfriend works in the club. They're still with her at the end, the big Lilico reveal. And I think it adds a different layer. It adds a very Velvet Goldmine-y layer to the ending of that movie. If you've seen a Velvet Goldmine with the manager that's with them the whole time. Actually, there's a lot of parallels between Velvet Goldmine and this manga. A lot, actually. But anyway, so the manga, everything that you're complaining about, the awkwardness, the gesturality of it is really made concrete in the movie. And it's a completely different viewing experience. And I think it's a huge, it creates an even bigger disconnect between the manga and the audience, I think, with this work. And I just wanted to share that because that was how I discovered and why I decided to read this manga. I read it before I read Pink, even though Pink had come out a couple years earlier. So yeah, I wanted to mention that because that movie puts a real different vibe to these tellings. And I think it makes me really appreciate that's maybe why I've been so effusive about the art in this, is because once you see this lushly rendered, it's very different. It's much more of a, it's not more horrible. It's more, I don't know.
Spare?
I don't know. It's...
Also, I'm just imagining Baz Luhrmann's Helter Skelter.
That's what it looks like. Honestly, if you get a sec, just pull up the trailer on YouTube. It's still there. It's in 480p because the past is very low res. But it's Baz Luhrmann's Helter Skelter. Like, it is just like up and bright and like the feathers, so many feathers, and they're all fucking CGI. They're everywhere. Nice. Everything's like that deep red purple and there's mirrors and like it's a lot. It makes me appreciate the art in this even more. So if I can make one from the heart recommendation, is even if you look at some of the art for this or you start reading it and you get put off and you don't have a podcast that's going to make you finish it. I think you'll come around. That was my takeaway, but I think I want to go back to the group. Deb, we'll start with you. What was your takeaway then? How did you feel about it overall, and would you recommend it? Would you tell other people to read it? Would you recommend Pink instead? I'm really curious.
Helter Skelter is a much more satisfying read and much more accessible read than Pink. Pink is a good second read. Mm. It's a little lighter. It's a little kooky, but this is kind of satisfying in a sense that I could. It's even though she's in this Japanese world of fame, it's a very universal world of fame. So I think you don't have to be immersed in Japanese culture to appreciate the story. And I could even imagine, as you were saying about the movie, I could even imagine this being adapted into a European or a West American movie with not too much problems. The art, like I said, is very distinct, and that's very rare, right, with manga, that you have someone who has such a distinct style. I think mangaka who you can count as having a distinct, very recognizable, very uniquely their own style is quite rare, and also that it's very stylish and very frankly female. I mean, it's
yeah.
it hits me where I think like, yeah, this woman, it's written by a woman, and a woman who has known some hard truths and has something to say.
She's seen some shit. David, how about you? How did you come out of the other end of this?
Similar to Deb, I think I would recommend it. I think it's amazing that every book I've read in like the Jose category has been like emotionally harrowing. There's not like a chill Jose book yet. I'm always looking. But no, like the art, like it came together with the story really well. Like the way the characters interacted, like the way they stayed in some clearly like horribly abusive relationships for reasons that weren't expressed, but you could kind of intuit. I thought that was kind of an interesting approach. Yeah, and overall, it was just a solid read about fame and terrible people, like Deb was saying. Like, I can see it being set anywhere in any industry, any location. Like, it's sort of universal in that sense.
Did you guys feel it was dated? It is pretty old now.
No. I didn't even notice it was there on Instagram.
There you go. That's for a manga written in 96. That's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. Wow. I would say a couple of the characters look very Britpop. Which maybe kind of dates it a little bit, but Britpop always comes around, so I don't know.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shocking to me that this was written while I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's fucking crazy. So, Chip, final thoughts?
This is the first book that we've looked at where I would recommend it for adults. And when I say adults, I don't just mean someone like 18 plus. I mean somebody who's actually looking for something that maybe is a bit more challenging and will make you think and like is supremely well told over an entire story. Like, you know, I don't know when this is going to air, but, you know, they announced the Golden Globes today. And I May Destroy You was not on it. I don't know if any of you have watched I May Destroy You. But
I wanted to, but... The title looked accurate, so I decided to wait.
Oh, it is. Like I couldn't watch it at the beginning of the pandemic, but like when I started to run out of stuff, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this. It's so well done and well crafted, and discussing it with friends, I'm like, it just feels like it's a show made for adults, where it's like not giving you answers, and you know, there's gray areas, and it's characters struggling, but the stuff that was nominated is just like. You know, I'm not going to name specific things, but just is juvenilia. And and I'm really struggling with that lately. Just like also, you know, working for Marvel and DC, you know, I'm contributing to this, I'm sure. but this felt really refreshing. Cause I'm like, oh, this is a proper, you know, a book that just kind of delves into issues and thoughts and the characters that, you know, aren't going to come out on the other end okay. So I quite enjoyed it, but I think it's a very specific person that I would recommend it to.
Well then, that went okay. I was a little bit worried about this choice, like I said, all along. Thanks so much for indulging me and for reading what I think is a great book. I hope it inspires you, listeners at home, to maybe pick this one up and check it out as well. It's a real good one. And so that was Helter Skelter by Kyoko Okazaki, published by Vertical Inc., a.k.a. Kodansha Comics, because I think Vertical Inc. is officially no more these days.
Yes.
Kodansha Seinen, whatever they end up calling it. So, yeah, you know, it happens.
They call that vertical integration.
They call that vertical integration. Oh, The writer speaks up. Yeah, I'm glad we could do this book. Thanks so much, everyone, for that one. We're going to do shout-outs. We're doing shout-outs this week, and I'm just going to go around as the people appear on my screen. And the first up is Chip. Chip, what do you want to shout out this week?
Well, I already kind of shouted it out. I May Destroy You. I don't know where it's available in America, but it was on Crave here in Canada. It's just, it's a stunning work of art, masterfully executed, and people should check it out. It's wildly uncomfortable. I'll just say that. And it raises,
kind of goes with our book.
Yeah,
this week,
it raises a lot of like hard questions and ethical dilemmas. And but it's if you can summon the strength to start to get into it, you'll be hooked and you'll watch it through to the end. It's amazing.
What's it about?
I May Destroy You.
It starts off with a woman in London who gets drugged at a bar. And a lot of the series is her kind of piecing it together, trying to figure out what happened that night. Mm. But it takes you down a bunch of different roads, and it's like a critique of social media, which hit me pretty hard. It's a great show.
Deb, what is your shout out this week?
My binge read this week is All Rounder Meguru.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah. It's about it's a manga by the creator of Eden. It's an Endless World. Mm. So he's an amazing draftsman. He can draw people very well. He can draw action very well. But it's a manga about mixed martial arts. It reminds me of like Hajime no Ippo, in that it's about a high school boy who he's inherently good-hearted, but he's going into a very brutal sport. Mm. And he's surrounded by these grown-ups who also, you know, like, so you, it gets into like the difference between Brazilian jiu-jitsu and karate and judo. And there's like these female characters too that are really kick-ass, but they're also very human. And every now and then there's like these weird moments of just bizarre humor. Like one of the recent volumes is like they go out to Tohoku for a tournament, and then they have their banquet at the inn. And then the women are like, well, I'd like to raise a toast to everyone being here. And then I normally have the guys, you know, the leader of this who arranged this tour to come up and speak, but then they cut to the other side of the room and all the men are naked and dancing around and drunk and doing shit with like, and it's just hilarious. So there's these moments of really great humor in there. And also he explains a lot about wrestling and judo and mixed martial arts and Muay Thai. And it's super interesting. So Kodansha has volumes 1-12 available free as Comixology Unlimited. So I just zipped through that, and then they got me on the hook to pay for volumes 13-18. So yeah, I see your game there, Kodansha. Yeah. You got me good. I love it.
David, what is your recommendation?
I'm going to shout out an Instagram account, which I feel like is relevant to the conversation today. Moyoko Ano, who assisted Kyoko Okazaki on a few works and is a big booster in general. Her Instagram account is amazing. It's MOYOCO_ANNO. And it's just her drawing and sketching different, incredibly handsome and beautiful people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if you want something positive on the internet, this is it.
Oh, yeah.
I will. I'll put that in the show notes as well, so that people can click on it too. And just quickly, Deb. It's funny you mentioned Hiroki Endo. I really wanted to recommend either of his short story series collections, which are called Tenpenshu, or the first volume of Eden. I don't really like where the series goes after the initial story. There's like Eden Volume 1 has like a really long, I guess what we would call a pilot chapter, and then it gets into the real story, and then it goes on for like 10 volumes. But all of his work is out of print. Dark Horse has let it slide. So yeah, if you ever get a chance, Hiroki Endo's Tenpenshu short story collections are great. But my shout out, my official shout out is I came across entirely by accident. They released a short film celebrating the 1,000th chapter of One Piece being published in Japan on YouTube, on the One Piece channel or the Shueisha channel or the Shonen Jump channel or whatever it is in Japan. So you just type One Piece 1,000 into YouTube. It's the top entry. It'll come right up. And it's got the English subtitles, which is awesome. And it's just a short film about what 20 years of One Piece being published in Japan looks like. 20 years of comics by one dude, like 1,000 chapters, and how the people who read it as kids grew with it and how different parts of the stories meant different things to them at different parts of their lives. It's so good. It's like it all the feels, like making you cry, like it's an insurance commercial where you get to see the little girl grow up in 30 seconds and she's going to be okay because you've got life insurance. Exactly that kind of like end of Mr. Holland's opus, you know, like forced tears kind of goodness. But it's so good. It's got that shonen fighting spirit. And even if you don't like One Piece, I think if you love comics, if you love books, it's amazing that they were like, we're going to celebrate this book doing well, and we're going to make like a 5-minute film that obviously they did a 30-second version of that they could run as commercials on TV to celebrate this with like actors and high, like beautiful camera work and stuff. It was it was shocking to me. And it was one of those like, oh, right, fucking Japan moments, like good Japan moments that did me pretty good. So if you type One Piece 1000 into YouTube, it's there.
Now, should I watch it having never read One Piece?
Yeah, it's not any more of a spoiler than anything. Yeah. It's really great. It's got the occasional. No, it'll still make you tear up. It's just the music and whatever. It's touch manipulative. It's good. Yeah, you'll love it. Right. You'll love it. All right. And on that note, it's time for recommendations for what we're going to read next. So as you know, this is Helter Skelter week. Next week, it is What the Font, which was Deb's pick. And then the week after that, and I don't have it yet, is Wave Listen to Me. Oh, sorry. What the Font is by Kunichi Ashiya, and Wave Listen to Me is by Samura, right? Hiroki Samura? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The week after that, we have to choose four. And after last week's episode, we were kind of talking a little bit, and it's like, it's sad that one of us keeps making, two of us make recommendations, and it's like, and Chip hates them. And only one gets picked so we've got like a list of everything we've recommended that hasn't been picked. So we're going to change it up a little bit. The three books that we're recommending today, we're going to do them all because we believe in them as books that Chip should read, be forced to read.
All right.
But to toss Chipper a bone, we'll let him choose the order in which he has to read them.
All right.
So I think that's a fair compromise. And that way we're not just like literally recommending books that are getting thrown into a fire after they don't get picked. So on that note, since I went today, Deb, what is your first pick or your next pick?
I'm going to go at Yotsuba.
Oh, I love Yotsuba. It is cute.
Yotsuba is really funny and it's really well drawn. And it's the comedy is very gentle, slice of life. It's about a girl, I think she's like preschool age. She has green hair and she's adopted by a young man. So he's like who acts as her dad. And they move back to his hometown. And so she's kind of innocent. She seems kind of like not quite from Japan. She seems a little innocent and not quite hip to the ways of the world. You kind of wonder whether she's a space alien sometimes.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. But, you know, it's like basically Yotsuba. The title is Yotsuba To, which means Yotsuba and. So Yotsuba and pancakes, Yotsuba and flowers. So all these little things that she encounters. And I just got to say that you'll appreciate on the art level because art is great. But the comedy, which is so hard to translate, comes across both visually and in the writing.
Okay.
It's terrific.
David, have you read that one?
Yeah. I love that one.
Oh, okay. I was like, because you kind of love that style of humor, the Nichijou City style of like oblivious, delightful humor.
Yeah, that's, I would say Nichijou's even more abstract than Yotsuba. Like, I think Yotsuba's still firmly in kind of the sitcom-y kind of vein.
Yeah.
While Nichijou is, well, we might get there in some later episode.
I hope so. Actually, so on that note, yeah. Did you want to,
David? Is Deb's recommendation your recommendation this week as well?
No, I've got one of my own, but I do like Deb's recommendation, so it's win-win for me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Nobuaki Tadano's 7 Billion Needles. This was a vertical release from I don't know 10 years ago, 2013.
Is that in print?
Yeah, actually, they re-released it in digital, and it should be back in print through Kodansha, maybe.
What's it about?
Essentially, like a young girl, it goes on a class trip to the beach, and then she looks up, you know, in the night sky, and she's like, oh, man, like, nighttime is so beautiful. And then a meteor hits her, and she's completely disintegrated. And then on the next page, she wakes up, and she's like, oh, that was such, like, a horrible dream. And she kind of has to solve the mystery of what happened to her after the meteor hit her. And it's loosely based on an old sci-fi novel by Hal Clement called Needle. And so it's 7 Billion Needles follows on from that. But it's a four-part sci-fi epic that I remember being really good 8 years ago, apparently.
Can I... So this actually isn't in print. It's only available in digital right now. But that's okay. Or at least it's not available in print right this second. Can I suggest to Chip... I know this is getting... We keep suggesting a longer series, but I'd kind of like to do all four volumes on this one. I'd like to talk about it as a series. It's a short series, and we've never done that before.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Mm-hmm. You want to do that? Okay. They're actually pretty short volumes. I think that they're only like 180 pages each. So Yeah, let's do all four volumes. I think that'll be really good then. And yeah, I only know that one because it went out of print super quick after it was released and the volumes were always going for like 40, 50, 60 bucks. So I'm glad.
So
So the cheapest that volume 3 is on Amazon right now is $102. So
Chris,
let's read it digital.
So Chris, based on your suggestion that we should read all four volumes, is David's pick your pick this week as well?
Fuck no. Get wrecked.
Harsh.
My pick is, I mean, anyone who knows me knows this has been coming. My favorite mangaka is Taiyo Matsumoto. He came to TCAF in 2013. He was nice enough to do a poster for us. And we became friends afterwards, which was rare and nice. And I still get to see him when I go back to Japan. It's a really nice time.
This is unfair. This is unfair. Yeah. Because if I reject this, I'm rejecting you and your friend.
Well, I'll let you choose. Right. There's two different books. The book that changed me on manga and anime to start appreciating seinen work was Tekkon Kinkreed, which was released as black and white. And if you remember back the old WEF days forum, Pulp magazine was coming out. The editors of Pulp, Alvin Liu, who ended up becoming the head of Viz for a while and is now the head of Kodansha, was releasing this magazine of like adult mature manga to North America. And I would buy Pulp and I would love it. But the one serial I couldn't fucking stand in this like manga anthology magazine was black and white, because the art was weird. As you can see, it's kind of like does not look exactly what you're thinking the art might look like for a manga. So they released it as a trade paperback, and I sat and I read the trade paperback all at once, and I got it. I was like, oh my God, manna from heaven, I fucking get this book. So for me, it was a really transformative book, and we're kind of going through the transformative book hit parade for the books that I'm recommending here. So I thought, we got this one. But the book that he did right after Tekkon Kinkreed...
Just tell me what the book is.
Is Ping Pong. Whoops.
Okay.
It's a
two-volume series. So Tekkon Kinkreed is 3 volumes in Japan, 1 big volume. Ping Pong was 5 volumes in Japan, 2 big volumes. This is volume 2. Volume 1's around here somewhere. I can see it.
Oh, it's only 2 volumes.
Yeah, they did it. They got it down to 2 volumes. I'm kind of impressed. Ping Pong is the... I don't talk about what I did at Viz because, you know, NDAs and shit. But I can say Ping Pong is the book I personally caused to be published in English. So this book would literally not exist in English if it weren't for me. I fucking love this book. And it's the book he did right after Tekkon. So you can break my heart in either like one of two ways. Which way would you like to break my heart?
Okay, well, so are you suggesting both of these books?
No, I'm going to suggest Tekkon. I think Tekkon is the way to go. But I'm going to be honest. I got shit from a friend of mine named Ed Chavez, who I love, who runs Denpa Publishing. And he's like, it does no good to review books months or years after they come out. And Helter Skelter was one of his. And it didn't get very much attention when it came out. It was kind of a bummer that it didn't, because there was no more books by Kyoko Okazaki released after that. Ping Pong is fresh. Ping Pong Volume 2 just came out before Christmas. So if we talk about Tekkon Kinkreed, it's a classic. It's got a movie adaptation. There's all kinds of stuff. If we talk about Ping Pong, it might actually boost the sales, and they might use it as like a nudge to publish
it's
more.
It's also very stylish.
Oh, sorry. Oh, this.
It's also very stylish Ping Pong.
Yeah, anime. There's an anime and a live action.
It's great to watch.
So I'm torn. I want to do the first one in order so that you read that one. It's the earliest book of his. It's kind of the earliest book of his. It's in print. And there's a digital copy that was just released actually last year as well. His work wasn't available in digital previously. But we could also recommend Ping Pong, and that might actually goose the sales a little bit. But that's like a way longer. That's like a $70 or $60. Oh, Canadian, it's like an $80 investment versus Tekkon, which is only $30. But it's newer, so it might boost it. So, you know, I'll let you choose which one of those you want to read, and then I'll let you choose the order between Yotsuba, 7 Billion Needles, or which Matsumoto you want to do. It's all in your hands, buddy.
It's a lot of math.
Well, first of all...
not fair.
First of all, Chris, I'm going to much like last week, I'm going to tell you this, and it's straight from my heart. You are so bad at this. I don't know what Tekken is. I don't know what Tekken is. All you've done is talk about everything around this book. I have no idea. Is Tekken a kitchen comedy? I have no idea. Oh. So you're done. You're done. You're cut off. You're cut off. You're cut off. The order is Deb first, because I need a real nice palate cleanser from Helter Skelter. David is next, because I'd like some fun sci-fi. Chris, you choose either one of those, it's fine. I have an idea that ping pong is about ping pong. That's all I've got.
We're gonna do Tech on Kincrete, okay. But everyone should read Ping Pong. All right, That's my second shout-out this episode.
We'll do Tech on Kincrete.
Tech on Kincrete, available as one volume, digital and print, from Viz Media. we'll have all of this information on the website as well, so you guys can like...
It's about two boys who are juvenile delinquents.
And it's about the end of their world.
Thank you,
it's
Deb.
It's about the end of the world.
Thank you, Deb.
Yeah, Deb and David are much better. I have personal stories, but I am not selling the manga very well. And I have taken your feedback to heart. And so this is going to be a long one. This is going to be a long one. Thanks, everyone, for sticking in and listening to this episode. I appreciate it. We are the Manga Explaining crew. I appreciate all of you for being here. Thank you for listening to me fucking talk. I appreciate it. And on that note, let's call it an episode.
All right. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
All right.
This has been Mangasplaining episode number 4, Helter Skelter by Kyoko Okazaki, published by Vertical Inc. and Kodansha Comics. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing the manga What the Font by Kunichi Ashiya and Masayuki Yamamoto, published by Yen Press. Want to pick up a copy? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop, and you can find one near you at comicshoplocator.com. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.